And I just kept moving in the dark. I would have a few runners that were kind of at my pace level. We'd pass each other several times throughout the race. And one guy was like, I got to know, his name was John. I can't remember his last name, but he's like, Verna, we have to stick together. You know, it's going to be dark. And then our headlamps would like help each other, your headlamp, my headlamp. I said, okay, I'll catch up with you. I never found him. I was like, what happened to John? And then I left and I could not find John. I was like, I don't know where John is. And I don't know. So he must have been way ahead of me. But then I made it to the finish line. And so then I asked my crew, did you see a guy named John? And they're like, I don't think so. And they're like, is it that guy that said this, that he would wait for you or he was to catch up with him? I said, yes. And they're like, I think he came through. I was like, okay, good. And as I sat there just kind of waiting, you know, just eating and warming up, I see him. He told me he finally was coming to the finish line. He told me he got lost.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest on the podcast this week is Verna Volker. Verna was a runner at the Hawk 50-mile race a few weeks ago. I was a volunteer there and saw her and found out a little bit about her and invited her to be a guest on my podcast. I found out that she's not only an ultramarathon runner, she is the founder of an organization called Native Women Running. Native Women Running is a community of Native women runners who work to increase visibility and the participation of Native women in the sport of running. I hope you enjoy listening to Verna's stories. I sure enjoyed talking with her. Here's my conversation with Verna Volker. You know, I saw your finish. I didn't see your finish. I saw you had a booth set up there at the Hawk. And so if I remember right, you had a group that you were with.
Yes, I had it. Yeah. I was running along with a group called Renew Running, which they run for land. And so they invited me to this event. So that's how I decided. And this actually, that 50 miler was my practice run.
Yeah.
My big race coming up. So.
Yeah. I saw that you've got 100 coming up. So what is the 100 that you're planning to do?
Javelina.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's
I did the 100K last year.
Okay, so you're familiar with what it's like.
I'm familiar with the course and I'm going to be grateful for that course because it's not like the Hawk. So now that I run anything, I'm like, this is not like the Hawk, you know, it's like so so I figured I did it last year, the 100K, you know, it's a little different area because it's desert and it's a lot hotter. I grew up in the desert, so this is, I don't know if that's any advantage, but I think what helps is running in humidity here.
Okay.
In the Midwest, though when I ran Javelina, there's no shade.
Yeah.
And that's always hard for me because I'm like, you know, you get used to where you run. So, but I did it last year, and so I figured, hey, I can do two more loops at this event. We'll see how that goes.
The Javelina course is deceptively hard. I mean, I looked at the course profile, and I thought, well, you know, you do the first half is uphill, and the second half is all downhill. And, you know, that's just – but I ran the 20 miles out there last year. It was one that I thought, oh yeah, I might do something more sometime down in the future. But I ended up being there that weekend and
okay,
you know, I can run the 20. And so so I did it. But it starts at night, so I didn't get to experience the heat.
Yeah.
But I did get to run on the course. I loved the desert at night. That was just amazing.
So much better and cooler and yeah. So that's coming up pretty soon.
Okay, well, that's exciting. That's a cool. That's a great race to.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you ran the 50 at the Hawk. What was your feeling about the how that went? I mean, you got a little. Well, the start was great. I mean, I had an attempt at 100 there last year.
Okay.
And we had 95 degrees and heat index of 103. And it didn't drop at night either. So out of 50 people who started thereabouts, I think only 11 finished.
Yeah.
And so you had great weather except for the, except for the rain.
So, my coach is really good. I have a coach who tells me we train by heart rate.
Okay.
So I stay at a like 140, even if I'm like the last person, it's like, that's what I stay on the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I think that has helped me with a lot of my ultras is just staying at that heart rate. And, so that's what I usually do. And he tells me to eat and drink no matter what. So, you know, with ultras, it's really mental. And mm-hmm. so there's just a lot of that going on in my head. But when I ran the Hawk, I was like, I guess I underestimated that race. I was like, oh, you know, it's in, you know, Kansas.
Kansas, it's going to be flat. Yeah. Yeah. We hear that, you know, if we're local.
I'm sure. And so even these like good runners that I was with, you know, who are more seasoned than me, or actually they said that was really hard. So that kind of made me feel like, okay, I just kept pushing forward. You know, I had my moment of like tears. I think the first loop, I just started crying. I just usually do that, let out one cry. And then I got to my crew, and then I was ready for the second loop, and I just went around. And that's – my coach has really trained me how to – I run in the winter too, so I know how to dress. So I had two headlamps. I had my really nice Gore-Tex raincoat. Mm-hmm. And I remember the second loop, I was like, I'm going to pack this because I'm going to make sure that I'm ready. I'm always trying to be ready for what the worst, you know. Mm-hmm. And so – thankfully, I brought those things because it rained. I think the last 6 hours of the last loop, it was that pouring down rain the whole time in the dark mm-hmm. with my headlamp. And I had one headlamp on, and then I had one headlamp pointing to the ground. So I knew what I was stepping on because it was getting slippery.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a challenge because, you know, it's like, you know, it's already rocky as it is, but to add water, rain, that just makes it a lot difficult. So, but I just kept moving forward, and I usually don't listen to music my first loop. You know, I wait for it when it's like the second time when I'm at the end, because mm-hmm. I'm like, I just try my best to just think of things to help me get through those last hours or miles. And I just kept moving in the dark. I would have a few runners that were kind of at my pace level. We'd pass each other several times throughout the race. And one guy was like, I got to know, his name was John. I can't remember his last name, but he's like, Verna, we have to stick together. You know, it's going to be dark. And then our headlamps would like help each other, your headlamp, my headlamp. I said, okay, I'll catch up with you. I never found him. I was like, what happened to John?
I think I know who you're talking about. It may have been John Crum. He's about like 5'7" or so. And yeah.
I was John?
Yeah, he's that way. I mean, I've run with him before. I did a race out there, the same, uh-huh. you know, the same area. And, you know, he got lost. And so, you know, I was like, okay, you know, we're going to stay together and I'm going to be, and, yeah, the last 10 miles out, you know, he just, you know, he finished about, probably think 10 minutes ahead of me just because he just goes.
Yeah. He just goes. And then he said to me, you know, you catch up with me. I'm not going very slow. I'm not going very fast. And then we can just, talk and, you know, make the time go. I was like, okay. So, but that last loop, where you could meet your crew, they were there, and I was just like, they told me to sit down. They're like, you need to sit down. So they fed me like the best cantaloupe ever. Like, it just tasted so good. Mm-hmm. And then I left and I could not find John. I was like, I don't know where John is. And I don't know. So he must have been way ahead of me. But then I made it to the finish line. And so then I asked my crew, did you see a guy named John? And they're like, I don't think so. And they're like, is it that guy that said this, that he would wait for you or he was to catch up with him? I said, yes. And they're like, I think he came through. I was like, okay, good. And as I sat there just kind of waiting, you know, just eating and warming up, I see him. He told me he finally was coming to the finish line. He told me he got lost.
Well, if John's listening to this, I can see a pattern here. Like he knows these trails. He shouldn't have gotten lost.
He was with another guy and he's like, good job, Verna. I said, what happened? He's like, I got lost. I got turned around. And I was surprised I even like made it through because, you know, you're out there in the dark. It's pouring down rain. And yeah, so yeah, that was like fun.
It is easy to make it. There's some places out there where if you miss the sign to turn, it's, you know, you're out there on a different trail.
Exactly. So yeah. So anyway, so it was tough, but I don't know whether I told my coach, I said, I don't know why I was sore, but I felt pretty good like mm-hmm. the whole time. And, you know, I just rested the next week and my legs weren't as, they were sore, but they were not during the race. I wasn't as like trying to like, maybe because I was hiking,
yeah.
You know, and the bottoms of my feet, I was really surprised that it didn't hurt, especially with that terrain. But of course that onset like soreness came a couple of days later, but my coach was like, We're on, this is where we need to be. We're on track. So, so yeah. And so, I finished it and it was a good experience. And, so yeah, that was my training run for the next, you know, it was nice to finish that. And I like the challenge, even though you don't like to be in that type of a challenge, but being in the rain, pouring rain in the dark, you just feel like you are this like badass, you know, like, hey, I did this. Because everyone's like, how? Especially the people who ran the marathon, the people that I was with, one of them was running the 50 miler and he didn't have a headlamp or a raincoat.
Did he expect that he was going to get to the finish line before the sunset?
He said he forgot.
Oh.
His headlamp. He ended up coming in before me, but he basically found another runner and that runner was his lead in like the headlamp. And mm-hmm. I was like, and he was soaking wet, I guess. He was just drenched. But the other people that ran the marathon, they only had one like a loop. And some of them were like, how could you go one more time around that? I said, I don't know, but I did. I said, yeah, I did. I don't know. Like, they're like, it was so hard. And I was like, so yeah, it was. So yeah, I'm glad that I was able to have a very difficult race to kind of lead me to what is ahead in the mm-hmm. next couple of weeks. So,
yeah, and I'd put a plug in for that race too, that I've run that course frequently. It is a tough course,
right?
But especially if you're looking for the first 50 miler and you want a challenge,
yeah,
the cutoff is generous because you have the same cutoff as the 100 mile runners. And so,
yeah,
well, that was my first real challenge was that 50 miler. And at the time there was a lady who was walking it and she, you know, she wasn't running and she was a, you know, a bit heavy, but she was out there with poles and hiking and, you know, she's like, I'm going to hike 50 miles. And I was like, you know, everyone is still cheering her on. And, you know, that's just a good supportive group, good support. The people who put on are, you know, very supportive and the fact is you can take 30 hours to complete 50 miles and it's doable. And so I really like the fact that they do that.
Exactly. That's what I liked about it too. And that's why I like Javelina too, because Javelina, they give you such a long, you know, you have a long time to finish that race. Mm-hmm. So I like races that give you that time because you just don't feel that pressure of like, I got to go faster than end up like falling off your mental whatever. So, yeah.
So, how did you get started, Verna, in running? I mean, what led you to become a runner?
Yes. So I'm Native American and I'm Navajo, and a lot of Navajos have grown up running. I have a lot of followers who, you know, their grandfather, their family members, many of them just grew up really like when they're young, just doing the running. And I was never that person. You know, no one in my family ran until later in life. And so I was an athlete, but I hated running. Like, I just hated any type of drills and stuff. So in 2007, my husband and I, we lived in Nebraska, and one of my best friends had passed away, and there was this like local 2.1 mile race in our town. And at the time I had three little boys. And I remember after her funeral, I came home and I was like, I should run this race in honor of her, even though she would be like, why would you run? Because I couldn't even say, like, why did you do that? So I remember running that race, and I often shared that picture of myself on social media. And I'm just, it looks like I'm like ready to die, because it was just like, you know. And I remember in that race thinking, oh my goodness, this 2.1 miles, how can anybody like do this? And then they had a 5-miler option, and the 2-milers would turn around and the 5-milers would keep going. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, who could run 5 miles? You know, I was just like, and so I ran that race, and I was like, okay, I did it. And then I kind of like started running little 5Ks, but life happens. Then I had my third son, and it wasn't until we moved to Minneapolis, and I had three little boys at the time. And I remember people here in Minneapolis were so active all year round, and we have a lot of trails, and they always clear these trails during the winter time. And I would see people running and walking and biking. And so then my sister was in town, because we had just moved into our house, and we went running, and she's like, you should start running. And at the time I was almost like 200 pounds. And as a mother, I just feel like we are always taking care of everybody. Mm-hmm. And my husband's job switched. We were like trying to sell our house back in Nebraska. It was such a stressful time. And I remember just finding comfort in food. But at the same time, it's like I had a newborn, I had a toddler, I had a preschooler. And so I thought, this running is going to be my thing where I can just go out and run. So I started running, and I had no clue about running watches or running shoes or PRs and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I signed up for a race, which I tell people, don't do what I do. I mean, I signed up for a half marathon, which I should have done a 5K. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I remember August of 2009, I ran that half marathon, and even though I was still in the process of losing weight, I finished that race and I felt good. And that's when it hit me. Like, I can actually do this running thing. And so I started running, and I did half marathons and 5Ks. And then in 2011, I ran my first marathon here. I did Twin Cities Marathon again. I did Chicago. I threw in another kid, so then I had my fourth child, you know. And then it was like in the last 4 years, I would say more than almost 5 years, I decided to go trails. And that's when I got hooked on like my first like 50K was of April of like 2018. And I was like, I really like this. And with my knee issue, I was like, my coach at the time, who was just starting to take me under his wings, recommended me running trails because of my knee. He said, it's actually much better for you than pounding. And so from there, I just signed up, like, you know, 2019, I ran my first 50 miler. And then I ran like 55 Ks. I ran my 100K. And I feel like running hasn't just been physical for me. It's been like this eternal, like heart, like stuff. And I often tell people that I run in memory of I run in honor of people who have passed. Like, I lost my parents. I lost my mom almost a year ago. I've lost three siblings. And so what I do with my running is I run in honor of these people. So mm-hmm. during my runs, when it gets difficult, I think of these people and I keep moving forward. And so...
You've probably heard the phrase, life isn't a sprint, it's a marathon. Whoever thought of this phrase was not a runner. Because, you know, a marathon, it sounds like a long ways to run until you actually run a marathon. Yes, a marathon is not a sprint, but running a marathon is nothing like life. But the ultra marathon, especially when you get to those distances of 100K or 100 miles, the ultra marathon, that's what life is like. For success in an ultramarathon, you have to manage three things: your energy, your thoughts, and your emotions. And for success in life, you have to manage the same three things: your energy, your thoughts, and your emotions. If your thoughts are always racing from one thing to the next, and if your emotions are constantly making you stress out, these two things will drain your energy. If you're a regular listener here, you've heard the stories from runners who talk about how their mindset can struggle, and that struggle often leads to their body following their mindset down the hole and draining their energy and leading to difficulties in finishing a race. As a coach, I help my clients develop a strong mindset. So whether your goal is to run far or live your best life or to go after your epic thing, you know, I talk about that, you know, the epic thing, the thing that you dream of doing, I can help you get started. Go to ultramindsetpodcast.run, schedule a free 25-minute conversation with me. I'll help you get past your feeling of being stuck. Ultramindsetpodcast.run, schedule a free 25-minute conversation and get you started toward living your best life.
Yeah, and so it comes from being a newbie runner until like now an ultra, and that time span has just been such a journey for me.
So you say you kind of bring these people to mind. What is the connection that you have there? How does that help you with your mental? I mean, because I mean you mentioned earlier, and it's like kind of where I am at too. To really kind of look at the mental side of running, the mindset that keeps people going. What does that kind of give you when you think about those people? And I'm assuming that there are people that were important to you, that were in your life, not just casual acquaintances.
Exactly. You know, I lost my father like when I was like really young. And so, you know, I've always had like this closeness with him. When my family tells me, being the youngest, I'm the youngest of 10. So, I think it was more of when things got difficult, especially in all my ultra races, like when things get difficult, it's almost like I see these people, like my parents and my three siblings who had passed. It's almost like they're saying to me, keep going, keep going. Mm-hmm. And so I think that really helps me in the midst of the hard, difficult times in ultra running, when you're just like so tired. You're just like, you want to give in. It's so hot, or you hurt here. I somehow bring in those people into my mind and thoughts just help me push forward. And I think that's been really powerful for me. And so I make sure that I write their names on my shoe and dedicate these runs to them. And I think that's been really key in my ultra running journey. And so there's often times it's full of tears and happiness, and but that's what pushes me forward in those races.
I like that you said that, because many runners will use, they talk about using mantras.
Yeah.
And one of the ladies that I know who's been on the show, She's a mindset coach as well, and we talked about how to use mantras effectively, and use mm-hmm. that a lot of times instead of using the word I can do this, to put it in the third person and say, you've got this, you can do this, you can keep going, that actually gives it more power. But what you were talking about, I think adds even a deeper dimension
right.
to what that is that you have somebody personally, it is like someone out there, the thing about trail running, nobody's standing on the sidelines, and road running, you have, people cheer, yes. They say the Chicago Marathon, people talk right. about the energy from the crowd in the Chicago Marathon, pushing them forward. You don't get that on the trails. And this, you talk about being in the rain, in the dark.
Yeah.
you don't have anybody cheering you on, but you do have people cheering you. I mean, you have this image of somebody that's meaningful to you that is saying, keep going. And I can see that would be a very, not only just a mental boost, but an emotional boost as well, because that is something that makes mantras effective is any mindset, anything that you do mentally, as far as trying to change mm-hmm. the way you think, if there's not an emotional component there, your thoughts, your heart will ignore the things that your intellect is telling you. If you're thinking things and your heart's not aligned with it, it doesn't have any power.
Exactly. That's so true. Yeah.
So what I see is, I'm sorry for the commentary, I see you doing is that you have a family, an emotional family connection and a visual image there that will go along with that encouragement. And I can see that's very, 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 very powerful.
It is. And it's very emotional at times. And just, I think, in the process of your grieving and, I feel like with my mom passing, it'll be a year in November. And I feel like I'm still on this grieving journey, but that grieving journey has become a switch of it's okay to run through your grief, you're going to make it through, you know? So it's all kind of no matter how hard it is, somehow you come out at the end just full of, I feel like, running itself is such a great, comparison to life. And so I think that's true. It's just so hard and you just want to give up, but then you just keep moving forward. And then the finish line is pretty an amazing feeling, especially a race that's so hard. Like you it's just full of tears. Majority mm-hmm. of times I'm full of tears when I cross that finish line.
Well, yeah, and especially when you get into the longer distances, the emotions are very similar to what you face in life.
Right.
There are times you feel like you can go forever and times you feel like you can't go another step. And the trick is just keep moving forward and not, right. Not actually just quit. And that is one of the things that I've appreciated about running is that a lot of men especially tend to segregate their emotions.
And yeah, I was very, right. very, right.
Like, we tend to be, approached, the emotions are something that you have to deal with, but if you don't have to deal with them, just ignore them. And, exactly. And I live a lot of my life that way.
Yeah.
And the thing that, one of the things one of my coaches did was to actually say, there's power in walking through every emotion.
Exactly.
And if you don't experience the hard emotions, you don't have the capacity to experience the joy emotions either, the joy.
Exactly.
And so, you narrow your, it's like narrowing the band. And so being, ultra runners have the opportunity to walk through some of those, those dark emotions.
Yeah, it's so true. And trail running too, it's just, I'm not a very fast runner, and I just remember always wanting to be so fast, like this fast road runner. And I think I just welcome trail running and ultra running just because you need to be slow. Like if you go in too fast, you're not going to make it through, your 50 miler. And just you realize that you're capable of it. Just keep being slow and steady. Slow and steady wins the race, mm-hmm. So you just, mm-hmm. that's why I really embrace that type of racing.
And you've started, you said you're working with Native women running.
Yep.
Yeah, Native Indian Women. So what led you to start that? I mean, you've had your running journey. So what was the thing that made you say, I think I want to start this thing to help other people?
Yes. So when I started Native Woman Running, I felt like I wasn't seen in running, even though running is, people always say like running is for everybody. I just felt like I wasn't seeing Native Woman Running being Native Woman runners that were, or being represented in like running in itself, whether it was magazines or advertisements or anything. So in 2016, actually, I was doing some research of like Native runners and like in Runner's Magazine. Like I was just kind of like searching up like, where are these stories? And I would find these stories far and few. And so then 2018, I had a group of like Native runners that I was following and who were like running, you know, so many different levels of like 5Ks to ultras. And I was like, why isn't anyone sharing these stories? So I asked a few of them, I said, hey, if I start this running account, which was Instagram, I said, would you guys be interested in following, you know, this? So on January 23rd, 2018, I started Native Woman Running simply as an Instagram account to bring representation to our women who were from all tribes and nations, who are running 5Ks to ultras. And they said yes. And all I simply did on that account was share stories of women and like reposting their story and giving everyone a platform. And so I wanted to build a community, a space for Native women who felt like this was their space. And then also I wanted to bring a light, shed a light of positivity on us as Native people, because oftentimes Native people, we are put in this box of like, we don't exist anymore. Sometimes people talk to us about like we're in the past when we are fully here today. And also there's a lot of like we're casino rich, or we are alcoholics. We get everything for free. And I wanted to change that negativity into something positive. And so Native Woman Running has just grown organically by word of mouth, and people have just been following us. And then we've created like virtual events. We run for our causes that, you know, that we truly believe in. And in the last like year, it was just becoming so much work. And so then I'm a HOKA global ambassador. So HOKA brought me on. And so that helps with just being able to quit my teaching job to do this as well. Mm-hmm. And so I told my husband, I said, I think I want to do this full time. And so he was on board with it. And teaching, I was a stay-at-home mom for like 15 years. I was a teacher. Then when I had kids, I was a stay-at-home mom for a very long time. And then I went back to teaching just a little bit. Then 2020 was the year I went back with the pandemic. And that year was exhausting. And then it just all worked out so that I could do this. And so now in the last almost a year, I decided to create teams around race events.
Okay.
So I had some girls running a race out in Antelope Canyon in Page, Arizona. And one of them was on my leadership team. And she said, we're going to be running this race as a team. There's a group of women. And I said, hey, why don't we Native Woman Running sponsor you guys? And you can run under the name Native Woman Running. And she's like, that's a great idea. And so we ran that race. March of 2022 was the launching of our first team there at Antelope Canyon. And if you don't know much about Antelope Canyon, it sits in Page, Arizona, and it's part of the Navajo Nation. And so I ran that race. It was a 55K. And it was just amazing to see like these women coming together. And we actually had a crew who actually supported me on my 100K in October. So they came up all the way from Tucson to Northern Arizona to crew us. And they were crewing all these like 7 girls who were running these ultra races. All of us were running 55K. So they were there to like support us. And it was just incredible to see us gathering and waiting for each other and the crew helping everybody. And I realized this is what Native Woman Running is we bring women together so they could have a goal of racing, be represented, but also bringing a group of community together and to show our presence at these races. And so we have already, it's exploded. So we had a team at the Boston Marathon. So that was huge. We have four teams. I think we've had a total of almost 10 teams since December, since that March, who are running in Canada, Toronto, Vancouver. This weekend we have some girls running out in Lake Powell. Four girls will be running Javelina along with me. We have some girls running out in Toronto this weekend and one in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Wow.
So basically these women run under Native Woman Running. I do my best to sponsor them or get them a free race registration. I also make sure that they have the means to get there, whether it's like gas money or hotel, things like that, or just anything for our crew. Because you know how it is when you have a crew, they need food. You know, they're these people who are waiting for you. And so one of the things when I partner with people and companies, I say, we need money for our crew who is going to be there for us. And not a couple hours, but some of them are like there the whole time.
Yeah. If you're running 100 miles, your crew is going to be there for a
long time. Yeah. And they need food and they need a place to sleep and, you know, they need transportation costs. And so that's what Native Woman Running does. And so we're bringing that representation into action. And so like the proceeds of our shirts and anything that we sell goes back to our women to help them with anything that they may need. So it's been pretty powerful. And so I'm really proud of how these women feel like they could be part of something as under Native Woman Running. And so that's been really, so because I didn't see myself in running or because I didn't see natives being represented, I wanted to change that. And so that's what I did. I shook things up a little bit, I guess
you could say. So are there reach to Native women to help them become runners, to help, you know, to help them, you know, kind of take the same kind of journey that you did and discover what running might do for them?
Well, sometimes, you know, I usually, a lot of times I make it clear that they should already be running, but I've had that question, you know, it would be a whole new like coaching and all that stuff. So I've had like individuals who are coaches who have offered their services and who will reach out to me and say, hey, Verna, you know, I can coach two of your girls if they're interested. So if they see a team, they'll say, hey, I noticed, like, I don't know if you ever heard of the Race Trans Rockies.
Yes, I've heard that. That's on my list of races I want to do someday. Yeah.
So we got three of our women into the 3-day race.
Okay.
And so someone reached out to me and said, hey, is it okay if I could give my services to the girls who maybe want to be, you know, more training to not have Alina for Trans Rockies? I said, okay, that'd be great. You just reach out to them. So there have been a lot of people who have reached out offering their services for free to us. And I think that's been really kind of people to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're really kind of looking for established runners more to represent the
The races that I choose are very, it varies. I mean, so it goes from to 5K to like big ultra. So I make sure when I'm like looking for races or people ask me for partnerships, I'm always making sure that I have every level in mind. Because not everybody can run a 100-miler, you know. Some people are just happy running a 5K. And so I make sure that I always remember that, to be inclusive in that way to everyone.
Yes, yes. Well, and you find that in groups. I mean, the trail running groups that I'm familiar with, there are people who say, I never want to run 100 miles.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're happy with running 20 miles. And I tell people, run whatever makes you happy.
Exactly.
And that, and there's oftentimes a lot of pressure to, okay, well, you've run a 50K, then your next step is the 50 mile. And like right. some people just aren't, you know,
exactly.
They shouldn't be pushed, and you shouldn't be made to feel, you know, second class citizen because you don't run any farther than 50K or a 5K or whatever.
Exactly. So. Yep.
So yeah, that's good that your group can have that same kind of acceptance and not
exactly
not make people feel that. So how have you? I mean, you've been at this a while. Do you get good reception from organizations that you contact?
Yes, so far everyone. It's very unique. I mean, like this weekend I was at the Twin Cities Marathon, so I was at the expo, and so I was able to share. I had a booth, and a lot of people haven't heard about it, but you know, I tell people that what we're doing, and it's pretty unique, and people are really want to be part of this. They, you know, we, and I welcome that. You know, we want people to be receptive, and majority of the people have been. So, but yeah, it's a lot of work on my end because I am a teacher, you know, and I can teach younger grades. So this whole new being in this position is new for me because I'm talking to a lot of race companies, like running companies that are big, and they seem to listen to me. So it's like, okay, I guess I'm doing this right. So yeah.
That's good. So if somebody hears this and wants to become connected with Native Women Running or to either help you with sponsorships, what's a good way to get in touch with you?
Basically, you know, you can go to our website, which is pretty simple. It's like www.nativewomanrunning.com. And usually there's a place where you can send us a message or just following our social media and sending a direct message. You know, usually I will receive that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And and you're on Facebook too. So is that under...
Yep, on Facebook.
Under your name or the Native Woman?
So under Native Woman Running.
Native Woman Running. Okay. That's the best way to get in touch with you.
Yep.
Okay. So, and then sponsorships, what kind of sponsorships are you looking for?
Well, I really welcome people who are willing to like give us like registrations that are free. For example, like Vacation Races, they do a lot of the races out in like state national parks. Like they do Mount Rainier, they do like the Rocky Mountain Half. Like I have a partnership with them where they are just like, Verna, choose how many races you want, you know, how many registrations we want, we give it to you. And that's been a really successful partnership because like they have just been very open. and I think, you know, on their end too, people realize, oh, Vacation Races is doing this. It's also good for them too, on their side too, that they're representing Native women in those ways, gives them a good name as well. So things like that, we've had people just give us like hydration stuff, like Goo Energy, sends us boxes of like, you know, gels, energy gels. So we've had people send us hydration packs, especially for our teams, so they wear them. Just things like that is just really helpful. We had financial contributions where we were able to pay for our crew, reimburse whatever we need to for that. And usually like when we do these ultra races, I go shopping with the crew and we go to the grocery store. And that's so fun because we just choose. You can tell we're all like, even the crew, I mean, some of them are ultra runners, so they know what kind of food we eat. So, you know, we're like getting jars of pickles and, you know, anything, Cokes and stuff. And so, and they grab food for themselves. So like just paying for those things is just so helpful that we're able to do that. So, yeah, you know, more pickles is great, you know, any kind of carbs and, those kind of things are very helpful. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the pickle juice always seems to run out before anything else when you're at the aid station.
You know, when I was at the Hawk, I can't remember, it was like one of the stations where you could meet your crew halfway. I don't know who it was, but he made quesadillas. And then he added bacon to it. And I can't remember who it was, but he was wearing blue. And he's like, hey, you want to try my quesadilla with bacon? And I will always remember how good that was. Like, especially when it was like just close to it. I can tell it was starting to rain. And it was just to have hot food like that was just like welcomed at that time. So I'll never forget that amazing quesadilla bacon. Yeah. at the Hawk.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things, the Hawk tends to have good food, especially the West Park aid station at the turnaround place. They had carrot ginger soup overnight.
That was good.
Yeah, the people there know ultra runners and what kind of keeps us going.
Oh, it was very good. We're all just like, this is so good.
Yeah. Wait, Verna, thank you a lot. Before you go, I have what I call the bridge questions.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid.
In your running, first question. In your running, what aside from gear, aside from shoes? So okay. Everybody wears. Most people wear shoes.
Yeah.
What is your must-have piece of gear? What is a piece of gear that you count on the most?
My hydration pack.
Okay.
So I have a unique one. It's called Naked Sports Innovation. It's kind of like a pack, but it just doesn't bounce. You know, sometimes you get hydration packs and they bounce. Well, this one doesn't. And it's pretty secure, but that has been like, you know, the best. I just discovered it a year ago. We became friends with the two people who, the brothers who actually own that company. And I think it's just been the best thing because the water bottles are just kind of inserted here. There's so many pockets and, thankfully, I have two of them, so I'm like, I just really like it. I just feel like, too, when it was raining, it was everything just stayed where it needed to, and I really needed that. So I think that's kind of like the thing that I never leave without. Oh, and also my Tailwind hydration. Tailwind is my thing, and so that is something I'm always like, make sure that everybody has, especially my crew, like, does everybody have Tailwind? I'll go buy some Tailwind. So that's, mm-hmm. I was happy that the Hawk had Tailwind. So
yeah, that's helpful.
Yes.
Well, and when it's raining, I mean, there's, if the pack is moving, there's a real risk of chafing. So,
yep.
Mm-hmm. So yep. That's a good thing not to have to deal with. Yep. So the second question is, what is the weirdest, strangest thing you've seen when you've been out on the trail running?
Let's see here. I haven't seen too much, but in the dark, I have seen glowing eyes. I'm like, what are you? Like, I couldn't even like decide, what are you? You know, because it's so dark. Mm-hmm. I was like, are you a raccoon? Are you, those have been some weird, interesting things. Like, I know there's animals out there, but sometimes, you know, you don't think you would really see them, especially when people are coming, there's like traffic. But yeah, just recently I just saw those glowing eyes at the Hawk and I wasn't sure what it was, but I quickly ran ahead. I was like, okay, I'm going forward.
Yeah, as long as there's no growling, it's probably pretty good.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I just assumed.
Third question is, what word or phrase sums up your life philosophy?
Resilience. I as a Native woman, I have grown up with just, you know, poverty, a lot of trauma, losing a father, alcoholism, just so many things. And just being able to make it through that. And I think I share a lot of my story as, you know, as a Native woman and being resilient. And I think that's why I can run these long distance. And I think that's just somehow I bounce back. I keep going. So I think that's the word.
I love that. Well, thank you a lot, Verna. I will put the links for your website and everything in the show notes as well.
Okay. All right.
So appreciate you taking time to talk to me.
Yes. Thank you so much for reaching out. Maybe we'll see you at the Hawk again. I won't rush to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there, more information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do know somebody who might like it, take it just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.